just the same.
I was at a party for the WFMU staff recently, and it's really interesting. I have so many great people, but I was talking with a lot of people. We're talking about what makes a good interview and what doesn't, and what makes a good guest and how to prepare, and sort of everybody sharing their trade secrets with each other. Very interesting topic. I don't know. It's kind of hard to talk about it with some people, easy to talk about some. Anyway, I enjoyed it. That's where I'm going with this. So you're talking about what one of the things that I always say makes a great guest for me is people that answer the questions, and maybe that sounds redundant or serious, but more often than not, when you ask a question and people don't answer it, their non-answer usually is not satisfying. I guess once in a while you run up with some genius who takes your ball and goes in a different direction and does something better than you could ever imagine. But usually that's not the case. Usually you know, people take their insecurity or whatever their pre-programmed thing is, and they go in that direction. And those are the kind of guests that drive me crazy. So all of that to tell you that today's guest, Winfield Parker, pretty much answered the questions, which makes him, in my book, a great guest. You know, he was short and to the point, and just answered whatever it was I was interested in. He comes from a real interesting music scene, somebody I've never interviewed from the sort of Baltimore soul music scene. So we talk a lot about that here. If you're going to the Ponderosa Stomp in New Orleans, you'll get to see him there this October. That's it. I hope you're doing well. Contact me at michaels@wfmu.org anytime. And here's my interview with the great Winfield Parker. Oh, baby, just the same. All right, there's Winfield Parker. Good morning. He joins us right now on the telephone. He's a soul singer, a songwriter, a producer, a saxophonist, and more. We'll find out all about it from Baltimore, Maryland. Winfield, good morning and welcome to WFMU.
How you doing? Good morning to you.
You grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. Tell me about your childhood. Did you? Because you started out as a saxophone player before you became a singer. Did you learn to play sax as a kid in school? How did you come to music?
Well, actually, I didn't start off with a saxophone. My family, I lived out in Howard County, and my uncles and cousins had a little group called the Tall Cedars. And I used to sit around and listen to them a lot. And then a cousin of mine used to road manager for the Swallows. So my cousins bought me a guitar for my birthday. So I learned how to play the guitar first. But then as I went to the high school, they had a high school band, so I picked up the saxophone. So I learned how to really play the saxophone in school.
Gotcha. And were your parents thinking that you would go become a doctor, or what was the projection for you?
Well, they didn't have one. They made me, because I was like born out in the country, like on a farm. You know, all I did was work and get a dollar here and a dollar there. And, you know, my mother, she was glad that I was into music, but they didn't push me. You know, we just came together in school. My cousins and I got a little band in school called the VJs. And it went on from there. Then I had my cousin was managing the group, Leon Dorsey. And we just went on from there.
So you formed this band, the VJs, and Sammy Fitzhugh and the Moroccos, and you guys are backing bands who are coming through the area. Is that what happened?
Well, I left the VJs. Seemed like they didn't want to go anywhere, and so I started playing with Sammy Fitzhugh and the Moroccos. And then Sammy Fitzhugh's manager, Mr. John V. Bishop, used to have a lot of shows up in West Virginia and up in Charlestown and, you know, all over. So then we used to back up everybody that used to come to this club called the John Brown Farm. And we used to back up a lot of folks that come up there, you know, like, Buster Brown, Shirley and Lee, and all of those type folks. Maxine Brown.
So what year are we talking about for that era?
Oh, my God. Let's see. I guess it was like early 60s.
Early 60s. And so guys like Shirley and Lee would come through and you'd have to learn all their songs and back them up?
Right, right, right.
So what kind of venues were these? Were these mixed race venues? Were these white venues, black venues?
Well, they're mostly black.
And tell me what kind of a crowd it was, what kind of a night it was, how much money you guys would end up making?
Well, we didn't make a whole lot of money. You know, if I made $50 a night, I was doing good. You know, back then, I guess they would call that a lot of money. But we didn't make a whole lot of money. We were just having fun and you know, doing what we do.
So a few years later, you hook up with this guy, Rufus E. Mitchell, who is a super, super interesting guy. He started with a dry cleaner, then became well-known as a guy who rented tuxedos, and he booked music at a place called Cars Beach, which was there's a lot of cool pictures of Cars Beach on the web, and I suggest folks go take a look. This was a segregated beach resort near Annapolis, Maryland. Tell me about the scene at Cars Beach, and tell me about this guy, Rufus Mitchell.
Okay, but what happened with Mr. Rufus Mitchell was he knew John V. Bishop that managed Sammy Fitzhugh. And Mr. Mitchell used to book Cars Beach. So Mr. Mitchell would have a group come in at Cars Beach, and he would get in touch with John V. Bishop, so there'd be a two-night thing for the group that was coming in. They would play Cars Beach one night, John Brown Farm or Shamrock Inn the next night. So that's how that happened. So then when I left and got my another band, when I left Sammy Fitzhugh and them, I formed a band called the Imperial Thrillers. So then Mr. Mitchell started booking me. And then I was playing at Cars Beach like twice a month, opening shows for everybody that came there. So then he decided that that I could sing, because I used to sing a Little Richard song all the time. So he thought I could sing, so he recorded my first record, My Love for You.
Gotcha. And, I mean, tell me about the scene at Cars Beach, because, I mean, things like that just don't exist anymore. What was it like?
Well, Cars Beach was down in Annapolis, Maryland, and people used to come in there in carloads. They used to charge to come in by carloads, not per person. People used to get in their trunks and everything coming into Cars Beach. But Cars Beach was like it's just a regular beach. And they had a great big stage there that was like underneath of a canvas or something like that. And we did shows there. Everybody went to Cars Beach. You name it, they were there.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the list of, you know, every famous R&B performer played there, and the crowds are huge, and it looks like it's just a real unique time in history, that Cars Beach scene.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Rufus Mitchell starts this label, Rujack Records, and starts your career as a singer, putting out some 45s. I know that a lot of these 45s have become collector's items over the years. I'm curious, did you save copies of these records? Do you have a complete library of your own music?
I got a lot of my 45s, yeah, I do. What I did, I went online, and my manager now, she bought the 45s. Some of them was costing like $100. and I'm saying, wow, you know, I'm getting $100, paying $100 for one of my 45s. I said, wow.
Yeah, I've seen that. They've become quite collectible over the years.
Right.
You cut, I think, 17 records for Rujack, and like we said, they're tough to find unless you want to spend a top dollar. But the good news is that I think about a year ago, Omnivore Records released this record called Mr. Clean Winfield Parker at Rujack, which has all of those 45s and the demos and some alternate takes and unheard things that sort of stayed in the can for years and years and years. So if folks want to pick those up, they can get them all for one reasonable price. And I know that in some ways, you know, that sort of those kind of things always help a guy's career when your music comes out again on CD. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, I appreciate Andeville picking my music up, and I let them have everything that was on Rujack, because when Mr. Mitchell, just before he passed, he gave me all the Rujack music, and I don't know what was on the tapes. Some of them didn't have names, but I was just grateful that my attorney, Scott Johnson, knew somebody at Andeville, and we worked it out that way.
I want to remind everybody, Winfield Parker is our guest today. Like I mentioned, there's a record called Mr. Clean, his most recent release on the Omnivore label. He'll be at the Ponderosa Stomp October 5th through 7th in New Orleans, Louisiana. And his website, if I got it right, it's winfieldparker.com.
That's correct.
So folks can check there to see what's going on with you. Now, I believe your biggest hit was 1971, your version of SOS Stopper on Sight, number 48 on the Billboard Soul charts, and a terrific record. How'd you pick that song? Was that your choice or a producer's choice?
It was my choice. It was Jimmy Bishop's choice. And he would pick quite a few songs, like the thing I did of Mac Davis, Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me. He did that for Lord Price's label, GSF Records.
Although you didn't tour that much, you did play on bills throughout the years with The Temptations and James Brown and Eddie James and Little Richard and Lloyd Price and Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, the Four Tops, Carla Thomas, a lot of the all-time soul greats.
Right, I opened shows for just about all of them. And then I played for Richard for a little while, you know, saxophone. That didn't last too long, but it was a great experience. But mostly all of those folks, like the Temptation, I opened the show for them off and on for 6 years. Temptation, Four Tops, Moms Mabley, you know, and over the years, because Mr. Mitchell used to have all those groups to come to Cosby's. This is how I got to be on shows with a lot of them. You know, Rufus Thomas, Carla Thomas, the Shirelles, The Temptation, Curtis Mayfield, and Impressions, and all of those type folks. Everybody was at Cosby's, so I opened the show for them at least twice a month.
Yeah, so you're sort of the house act there, opening for everybody. I mean, it sounds really exciting, just even to play those shows, but also to get a chance to see all of those folks.
Right, right.
Is there anybody who sticks out in your mind as being particularly fantastic?
Well, I tell you, I never was on a show with Sam Cooke. But that was my idol. Sam Cooke was my idol. But to be on a show with someone was The Temptations and The Four Tops. That was really a nice experience, and especially Moms Mabley. Just about everybody, you know, I was just proud. And Otis Redding, that was my buddy. That was my buddy because Mr. Mitchell, when Otis first had his first song out, These Arms of Mine, he came to Baltimore to be at Cosby's. He didn't have a band, so my band backed him up at Cosby's. So then when the record got so big, when Otis went back home, he didn't have a band, so I gave him half of my band. So then Otis got big, then he started his own label, Jodis Records. So Mr. Mitchell wanted Otis to record a song on me. But Mr. Mitchell got confused and sent me to the wrong place. And when I was supposed to be going to Muscle Shoals, Alabama to meet Otis so he could record me, then he was supposed to record Arthur Conley. But I went to the wrong place. Conley was already in Muscle Shoals, so Conley did Sweet Soul Music. Actually, that was supposed to have been my song.
Oh, really? So that track was for you to sing on, but that's an amazing story.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I got twisted up with that, with Mr. Mitchell. You know, he got confused and sent me to Cincinnati when I'm supposed to be in Muscle Shoals. Huh. So Otis never had to pay for the studio time. So since Conley was already there, he went on and did the song.
That's very interesting. Well, it's interesting because the style of your singing, like you said, there's a little Sam Cooke, there's a little bit of Otis Redding, and you've always managed to sort of have a leg in great ballads and great, you know, super hard up-tempo numbers too. So I could imagine you singing that song really well. Tell me about the end of that scene. I mean, what years did the Cars Beach scene stop, and what happened? Was it when disco came in? Was it when segregation ended? What happened?
I think when disco came in, it knocked a lot of artists out of work, because then we wasn't working a lot. There wasn't a whole lot happening at Cars Beach because the crowds wasn't coming, because of the DJs. The DJs was making all the money, you know, people was going to the clubs and whatever to hear the DJ. So everything died down in the early 80s.
Yeah, so what happened to you during that time? What did you do?
Well, in the 80s, well, I had a barbershop. I was cutting hair and stuff like that. And I was doing a gig here and there, you know, at a club in D.C. Called Jackie Lee's Lounge. And I was doing a few gigs here and there. But then I had the barbershop that I was making my money, you know. So then after the years, things started to fall back in place again with the music, you know, live entertainment. But by then, I had started doing gospel music. And I did gospel music. I had my own label called BP Records. And I had a big hit out on my gospel label called Sending Up My Timber. So that started me doing gospels, and I'm still doing gospel. Matter of fact, I got a gospel gig this week, and I'm all over the place now. I'm doing R&B and gospel now, so I'm real busy.
Yes, I noticed on your website and on YouTube, I mean, there's tons of clips of you singing gospel. And on your website, I know that you're selling a bunch of gospel releases folks can check out. I mean, tell me what led you to that. Was that something always part of your life?
No, things got so hectic, like in the 80s, like the middle 80s, like 85. I got in a little trouble with the law. Got locked up in jail. And when I got locked up, it made me sit and think, you know, how great God could be in my life. So then I had time to sit and think about where do I want to go with this? Because being out there in the streets, being wild, being tempted with this and being tempted with that, I need God in my life. So when I got locked up and got time in jail, I met Jesus. So that started me with my gospel.
So for some performers can't do both. Some performers think it's not right to do both. For you, that's not a problem to keep those two worlds separate, or do you think they need to be kept separate?
Well, the way I look at it, it all depends on your understanding about God, because God went everywhere. You know, he went everywhere. If he's going to just go to the righteous people, what is the unrighteous going to do? You know, so he had to go everywhere. So whenever I do an R&B show, I always add God in it, because I usually close out the show with my latest song, Lord, I'm So Grateful for All You've Done for Me. And when I do that, man, people just go wild. You know, so gigs I won't do. I don't go into nightclubs anymore. I do venues and stuff like that, churches. You know, cause I don't go into clubs where they're doing a whole lot of drinking and smoking cigarettes and all of that stuff. And you know, you learn from your experience. You know, like 4 years ago, I had lung cancer. And it took part of my lung. I'm still here. Then 2 years ago, I had double pneumonia. God took care of that. I'm still here. I'm getting ready now to go to New Orleans. So, you know, I'm good. You know, I'm blessed by the best, you know?
Yeah, well, I can tell. I mean, I can vouch that you really can still sing. And I mean, and a lot of guys get to your age and, you know, they don't quite have the pipes. I guess one of the things that works in your favor is that you always had a little bit of a kind of a huskiness, a raspiness, sort of like Otis Redding in your singing style. And now that you're an older man, it's still there, but it really works for you, you know? And I think if folks don't believe me, they can go online and Google Winfield Parker and see some video of you recently, just singing 100%. You just mentioned it, Ponderosa Stomp, October 5th and 7th. Like I said earlier, you've got a lot of different styles. You've got some really funky records and some super up-tempo records, like dizzyingly fast. What are you going to be doing in New Orleans in October?
Well, I'm waiting for them to let me know what songs they want me to do, because, you know, I could stay on stage for 2 or 3 hours, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But I'm trying to wait to see which songs they want me to do, because a lot of those songs I haven't done in years.
Yeah, well, that's one of the great things about Ponderosa Stomp, is they do sort of get folks to sing songs that haven't been sung in years, and that's kind of half the fun of it. It's just folks should really look forward to that. Tell me about, there's one thing I've never quite understood. I'd love to know the story behind two songs, She's So Pretty and Funky Party. They're really the same exact backing track, right?
Well, no. She's So Pretty, Mr. Mitchell cut that on me first. We was in D.C. We did that in D.C. But then in the process of him turning me over to Jimmy Bishop, we changed the words to Funky Party. So I wrote the song, but, you know, we changed it over to Funky Party.
Whose idea was it to take the same song and just change the words?
Jimmy Bishop.
Gotcha. Well, that song is a total number one hit record. I love that record. Also, that's a fast tempo. You must wear bands out with that.
That was one of my favorite songs. Everywhere I go, you know, they now they say, are you going to do Funky Party? So I said, yeah, I'll do it, you know.
Well, Funky Party is like a number one hit song. We're going to hear it soon. I want to remind folks once again, WinfieldParker.com is your website. Folks can get the latest of what's going on with you and your music and your life and your ministry. And don't forget the omnivore release, Mr. Clean, Winfield Parker at Rujack, and the gig coming up in October in New Orleans at the Ponderosa Stomp. Winfield Parker, it's been so fun, and what an interesting life you have had.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. I just thank God that I'm, you know, just turned 75, that, you know, I've been through the storm, and I'm still going through a storm, but it's going to be all right.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got kind of an amazing attitude. I mean, you're a guy who's been on so many labels. You know, some folks would feel like they've had great opportunity and feel real happy about that. Others, you know, you never had a giant hit. So, and some people would feel a little anger or resentment or frustration. Which side of that do you fall on?
Well, I tell you the truth, I'm just grateful that I'm still here, because a lot of my friends that I came up with back in the day, they're gone. You know, and it's not but a few of us left. But I'm just, that's like the new song I have out, the gospel song. Lord, I'm so grateful for all you've done for me. So I got to look at it to be on the positive side. I can't look at what could have been or what should have been. I got to look at what's happening now. You know, so I'm just good. I'm just grateful. You know, I'm doing just as much now that I was doing back then.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, well, you can't lose with that attitude. So it's terrific to hear. Let's hear Funky Party, and I want to say thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on your radio show.